Hi, guys. This November, join us for our favourite event of the year. It is Your Horse Live at Stoneleigh Park.
And we've got a stage this time.
I know. They're trusting us with the stage. We are going to be hosting the Shut Up and Ride stage from Your Horse Live. It is going to be incredibly exciting. And Ben, you're going to be there anyway.
I'm going to be absolutely everywhere. I will be performing every day in the SEIB arena. I'll also be doing demos in the how-to yard, meet and greets, and spending time with you lovely people on the stage with some amazing guests.
Yeah, we're going to be chatting to some really cool people, aren't we, Jenny?
Yes. Oh, my goodness. So many. I might have to sneak off as well because Oliver Townend and Jeff Billington are back doing their performance. And those guys are hilarious. So if you can't find me, you'll know where I'll be. But we've got the likes of Becky Moody. She's been on the podcast before. We know how much fun she's going to be. Emma Massingdale. Yes, so many amazing riders. And I have a feeling Jay Hallam, who has also been on the pod, is going to be there as well. So it's going to be a lot of fun. What about you, Simon? Are you going to sneak off and do some shopping?
Yeah, I think so. Your Horse Live's got the most massive village where you can go shopping, which I'm very excited about. You'll see me out there.
My record bargain for Your Horse Live is I once bought a bridle that's really, really nice for £10. £10 bridle! You're not getting that anywhere else, are you?
That is pretty impressive.
Right, so get your tickets now at, let me get this right, yourhorselive.co.uk. So you can join us on the Shut Up and Ride stage, sponsored. Of course they've come with us. Of course they're coming. Charles Owen. And it's going to be brought to you by the wonderful Your Horse magazine. So join us there.
It's basically just really good fun for 3 days.
Absolutely. And 3 nights.
And do you go out in the evening and everyone goes and gets drunk and has a great time?
Not that we'd ever consume alcohol to the point of drunkenness, Simon, but
no, because
there may
be
a few.
That would be wrong.
To say, going out sounds a little ambitious. We make it back to the hotel, but it is honestly, it's the best event. It feels, do you know how a lot of people like think about like Christmas lights coming on and that's like the end of the year and it's like festive? For me, it's always been Your Horse Live because like everyone's got that kind of like, do you know, horses are getting a bit fluffier, the weather's turning, and it's just
like the end of term feel.
Yeah, yeah, for everyone. Like, you know you're not probably doing too much for the rest of the winter. And yeah, all right, I cannot wait.
So the boys didn't realise that I'd press record. And I chatted away here. Welcome to the podcast, everyone. Everyone's going to be like, have I started this in the middle of the podcast? But I was like, we have got exciting news and exciting reveal. And I was like, do you know what? I'm just going to press record on the boys' chat.
Just going to reveal it.
I'm just going to reveal it. So welcome to the podcast. What's the big news, boys?
We're going to Your Horse Live. Whoop, whoop.
Oh, sorry, Ben. Go.
No, you go.
You go.
No, you go. Okay.
So we have managed to snag the spot, which is where, I'm going to say, Jenny, this is where we sort of first started doing stuff.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
together, 100%. Me and you, isn't it?
Yeah, so, where I first properly met you.
Yeah.
And so when was that? How long ago would that be now? How long have you guys been in a relationship?
About 6 years, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah. So to give it context, everyone's like, what the hell have I tuned into? Also, if this is the first time people are tuning into the podcast, they're like, what? What's going on? So, Shut Up and Ride.
Yeah, sorry, and I just said about Jenny and Ben being in a relationship. They aren't. They're both married.
I couldn't handle his all kind of... He's too neuro-spicy even by my standards.
Yeah, so, what Jenny and I have is very casual.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, Ben, could you cope with being married to her or being in a relationship with Jenny?
Well, I don't know. I've just seen how much grief poor Gregor gets.
Well, this is it. Poor chap.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm derailing this terribly.
We really are. This is the most tangent. So, first of all, me and Ben are not in a relationship. He's far too handsome for me. I wouldn't know what to do. Although,
whoa. Your husband is incredibly good looking. Just
he
so
is,
you know.
Isn't he? He is. He's gotten hotter with age as well. Like, he really has. I always used to say he was buff waiting to happen, but now he's just buff. Like, he is turning into a DILF?
He is definitely a DILF. And he's also a lovely, lovely man. And you must remember that, Jenny.
This is the nicest I've ever heard you speak about him. Like, ever.
And he has got a beautiful willy. That he really does.
What? All right, Kate, can we... All right, we'll get to the announcement. What makes a beautiful willy?
Well, it's just the right size. It's not too big, not too small, not too narrow.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that that's the case for everybody though, Jenny. Different people like different things.
Well, for me... It's I can't believe I'm talking.
You started this.
It's when they say, "Oh, it's not how big it is; it's what you can do with it." It normally comes from somebody who has a small penis.
Oh, yes, that's true.
That was never the tagline we had growing up. It was, "It's not the size of your hammer; it's the nail you're swinging it at."
Size.
So it doesn't matter if you're packing a micro. If you've got a 10 out of 10, who cares?
Yeah.
Well, there we go.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure that's true, but
Simon's like, your partner cares, Ben. That's who cares. The person whose most common line during coitus is it in? That person cares.
Oh, that's like that the Sex in the City scene where she's like, oh, put it in, and he says, it is in.
It is. Do you know what I've always thought about is if you're ever in the throes of passion. And then you get requested to go increase speed, to go faster. Do you remember that scene in Titanic when he's like, they're trying to steer away from it and they're in the engine room and he's like, full speed. He's like, she's given us all she can, Cap'n. We're at full speed. And I always goes through my head. You're like, this is it. This is all I got. Like, this is, you know, leave a bad Yelp review. Because like, this is it.
Oh, Gregor does have a fantastic bottom as well. I keep saying to Gregor that his best feature is his bottom and he thinks it's his nose. We have quite a few arguments about this. This is definitely not his nose.
Right, anyway.
What's wrong with his nose?
Well, it's just not his best feature. His nose is all right.
So you think that his penis is his best feature or his bum's his best feature?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think his bottom. The penis is a close second.
Okay.
And then maybe his face.
And then right at the bottom of the list, his personality.
So in theory, you'd have fallen deeply in love with Gregor right if you'd met him on Naked Attraction.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, good point, actually. Yeah. Oh, no, because actually I would have thought he was too short. Well, so... But,
in just that appendage or...
No. So I always imagined that I would end up with some like 6'3" strapping rugby lad. Like that's what I had. We were in the pub once in our local pub and the manager was this guy called Will, who was basically the epitome of everything I thought I would end up with. This like 6'3" rugby kind of guy. And I was looking at him like and chatting away. And then when he left, Gregor turned around and went, that's the guy you thought you'd marry, isn't it? And I was like, yeah. But no, Gregor is 5'10". And I am 5'10" as well, but I have to say that I'm 5'9½" just to make him feel better. So yes, I would. But then it was his personality that won me over. Or
did the accent make any difference?
No, that was almost a hindrance, to be honest.
Was it? Do you not like the Scottish accent?
Not a big fan. There's nothing.
So you prefer Irish, don't you?
I do like it. I like a Welsh accent, weirdly. Can you do a Welsh?
Oh, I'm shocking at Welsh.
I know. It always turns into Indian when I try and do it.
I tend to turn into Indian when I try and do Spanish.
Well, your Spanish is really good. So I was just on an Instagram haul and there was a story about a woman who woke up one morning and sounded Chinese. And apparently there's an actual, like a syndrome where you get foreign accent syndrome. It's like really rare, but
really?
Something happens in your brain. And this woman in the video, she genuinely sounds Chinese, like this very like not Asian lady. She is fully English or white Caucasian. I don't know what the correct term for a British person is. And yeah, she woke up one morning sounding Chinese and that's how she sounds. And they can't even train her to change back. Apparently it's an actual problem. Could you imagine?
Wow.
If you had to be stuck with any accent for the rest of your life that wasn't yours, what accent would you want? I think Spanish is quite sexy. Like the Espanol.
Yeah. Sí, sí. Es muy bien.
But the problem is, if you did get stuck with something like an Asian accent, like a Chinese accent or from that part of the world, people would just constantly think you were taking the piss.
Well, yeah, they probably would. But I mean, does it happen like in all different types of languages? Like,
I think so, yeah. It just said foreign accent syndrome. It's an actual syndrome. Ben's looking like
mad.
Shocked.
I'm just like,
this. We are skating on thin cancellation ice on this. I'm like, every time someone starts saying something, I'm like, yeah, word that. Cool. We steered round that.
Yeah.
Let's just keep going.
It's an actual thing. I'm not trying to offend anyone.
I've seen it. And it, she is the most, like, it is the whitest
English-est.
Lady. Like someone's mum that's like going to bring the builder a cup of tea. Outside, down here, like proper, and she just, she went to bed, she woke up, she has, and to describe this in full, when you see the video, it's not just an Asian accent, it is, if you were trying to be offensive with an Asian accent, it's what this lady has.
What? Okay.
And she, it's not her fault, it's to do with something in your brain. And,
it's nuts. Yeah. So what it's a bit was like, in her brain that was the accent that came out? Like, do you think she watched something before she went to bed? Like, that blows my mind. Like, how did that happen, if that makes sense? Like, what was she watching?
Risk.
So do you think it's like, because like when I ring up to order my Chinese takeaway and they hear the accent like down the phone, and then that night they go to bed and then their brain clicks in and goes, I'm going to talk like that.
Maybe. I don't know. It's really rare. It did say it's a very rare syndrome.
I was once at a Chinese restaurant with one of my old bosses. I don't want to say who it is. Just because no grief for anybody. But I was in out for a meal with an old boss, and we went to a Chinese restaurant, and they were exceptionally eloquent with languages. Like, they spoke like 8 languages, like fluently, like insane.
Oh, amazing.
Wow.
And so, and like European languages, but then like they spoke Mandarin, they spoke Arabic, like different dialects in Arabic, all sorts. And so we're in this Chinese restaurant, and the person that came to take the order looked ethnically Asian. And so he started ordering in Chinese. And then this poor lad who stood there taking the orders, like, I'm real sorry, I don't speak that. I'm from Birmingham. It's just like, do you know one of those moments where you just want to like sink into the furniture and you're like, I don't know if that was a hate crime or not. Like, I'm not sure where we are.
The lines are so blurred now. Like, I think people, if you get offended by stuff, then everything's blurred. Everyone should just love everyone and not give a toss what accent anyone's got. And no one's ever trying to be offensive. It's not like the 80s. Like, with like, what was that program that probably got banned? Spitting Image. Like, this is going to be way beyond. Ben's probably too young. Do you remember Spitting Image with the puppets? Okay, I'm going to have to edit this out. You both are looking at me really blankly.
No, absolutely. I remember Spitting Image. God,
but you couldn't have that now.
No, you couldn't have that now. You couldn't have it. And it was actually very funny.
Right, I'm going to finally do an introduction. Welcome to the Shut Up and Ride podcast, sponsored by Charles Owen. And what we were trying to get out at the beginning of this is that we are going to Your Horse Live. Woo! And that is what they were talking about at the beginning.
So we're talking like this live, which is really exciting.
I know.
No one's going to get bored, are they?
I'm really scared.
And I won't talk about Gregor's penis.
There are children at Your Horse Live. What are we going to do?
Yeah. No penis talk, Jenny.
No. But don't worry. If we will be at Your Horse Live, and we will be interviewing the guests that they have there. And we'll be on stage, and Ben will be in the arena. So do come and say hi, come and listen. But we also are going on tour, where we do not have to obey any rules. Actually, Your Horse Live haven't told us there's any rules. Like, they haven't said you can't swear. I'm just assuming that. But on our tour in January, we are unleashed. In January, when we're on tour, obviously you guys are going to be on horses and doing demos, and it's going to be amazing. We've got Silly Prune coming along, Hannah. Which we need to discuss what we're going to make her do, by the way. This is going to be very funny, and what we need Becky Moody to do. I think maybe Becky Moody needs to at least stand on a horse, Ben, or something. Or do you think Becky Moody can jump, Simon? Do you think we can get her jumping? I don't know.
We need to speak to these people, possibly,
about
what they're willing to do.
See what they actually want to do.
No, we don't tell them what they're going to do. It makes it more fun for the audience when it's a surprise. But we have had people asking, can their kids come to the Shut Up and Ride tour? So this is something I needed to address for everybody. I feel like if your kids are listening to the podcast, they are more than welcome to come on the tour. That is my, I'm not going to say no. You don't have to be 18. There's not going to be like, it's not like we're doing it in the pub like last time. So I have said yes, if long as you don't mind that we may swear a little bit on it.
There is a language warning.
Yes. But I feel like
Jenny
there's a lot
Moodle
of people are like...
may well smear. She may well swear.
Don't say it's all me. You two are just as bad. You are like sheep in goat's clothing.
You swear a lot more than we do. But they say that people that swear a lot, are very trustworthy, Jenny. So this is good.
And
it
intelligence, Simon. Yeah.
And is intelligence as well?
Yes, I'm going to throw that in. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Well, that would explain why I'm not swearing very much.
Neither Simon nor I have decided to sort of extol the virtues of our partner's genitals on here, Jenny, which you did about 5 minutes ago. So I think it's not just the swearing, really. Yeah, if you want to bring your child, that's on you.
Gregor won't be there. We will not be doing a big reveal.
We won't stop you bringing your child to the podcast.
That could be your lecture demonstration, Jenny.
My lecture demonstration.
Naked attraction.
There we go. Yeah. No. So please buy tickets to the podcast.
Whose penis is this? Oh my God, it's Oliver Townend's.
I think plenty of people have seen that penis. Thank you very much.
I'm not sure that's true.
Oh, my Lord.
Oh, sorry, Oliver. Sorry. I'm not going to edit that out either. Oh, I love him. He won't mind. He'll find it funny. No, I don't think he'd listen to our podcast. I think we're fine.
Anyway.
Anyway. Right. God. I had so many things I wanted to talk about. And then I've been totally sidetracked by accents. So yes, please buy tickets. Please, for the love of God. We've got a few left for the unicorn, but lots left for Bishop Burton. So please come along and we'll be very funny. And there'll be horses. So please buy tickets. And please share the pods. Right. So how's the week been, boys? You weren't on our last pod, Simi. We were speaking to Extremes about their band. And go back and listen, guys, because it's actually really interesting. I put my band that I wear around my leg, around my plants, because he says it helps plants grow. I am not fucking kidding. This plant was on its last legs, and literally within less than 24 hours, it was growing new bits to it.
Do you put it around, like, the pot? Or, like, around the stem?
Yeah, around the stems, because it's kind of one of those big one, so I just pulled it all in and put the thing around it. People must think I'm insane, but it really did. It grew like new leaves. I'll take a photo. Do you know why it was dying? Because I went to England and Gregor forgot to fucking water it. That's why it was dying.
After the chat we've just had, I think Jenny's going to be putting it around Gregor soon.
Yeah. And it just grew like mad.
I hope it doesn't get any new leaves, though.
Oh, but anyway. Right, so, Simon, how have you been?
I've been very good, thank you. I've been very
You're in
good.
Very good form today. You're in excellent form. I like this. Have you had a sleep or something? Have you had a nap?
No, I've had a haircut, actually.
Oh, wow.
Very sharp.
I had a haircut. And it didn't take much off the top this time. Last time, they went a bit crazy.
Is that quite like... So, how much input do you have when a man goes to the hairdresser as to how much you want off? Like, do you just trust them? Do they look at you and go, yeah, I know
well,
what to do?
Well, I always go, so they say, oh, so what do you want doing? And I'm like, oh, well, and it's always someone different. So I'm like, oh, well, I normally have like a number six up the back and sides, and then it's just like messy on top. And so, more often than not, they go, a number six, what's the point? because it's so long, and I'm like, well, I mean, basically do whatever you want, but I don't want to go too short, because like I think like being like a skinhead like or a fade is just, I don't think that would suit me. I think I'm too old for that. But it really offends me the way that these days, like, it's chop 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 and I can see all this hair coming down and there's all these greys everywhere. What is going on, man?
You're old
slippery
now
slide. Yeah,
you're old. What about you, Benji? You have your like one trim a year, don't you? Or one
well,
or two?
Well, it depends. Oh. Like, I do tend to have haircuts like horses get clipped. Yeah, like a winter cut and a summer cut. But it depends. If I go to the salon, which I go to. Then I
have the salon.
Then I have lots of input, and it takes about 3 hours. And we read magazines, and we gossip, and we drink tea, and we have cappuccinos, and it's lovely.
Getting nails done.
But if I'm absolutely, and that's when I used to do loads of funky stuff with my hair all the time, didn't I? Like, remember when I was peroxide blonde hair? Were you around me then? That was bad.
I probably blocked it out if I was.
And so, like, yeah, but if I'm in a rush, then I'll go Turkish barbers, which is like.
Oh, is that when they do your ear hair as well?
Well, yeah, but I'm talking like in and out in 10 minutes, costs about £7.
That's where I went today.
Yeah.
Oh, did you?
And the thing that gets me with that is like, he says, oh, what would you like? And I'm like, yeah. And then they start, and there are like three of them doing it, and they all start talking amongst themselves in a language that I don't understand at all. And I'm like, he could be very easily saying, this guy is a dickhead.
Yeah,
I wouldn't have said he's easily saying it. I think he's definitely saying it.
And what this guy, and what the hell does he think? A number six? What a twat.
And did you sit there going, did you know I was double clear around Burley? Just in case.
Yeah. And he's like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
So here in Canada, the mullet is huge. I know it's bigger back in England now, but like kids here have like take it full like undercut. And then full-blown mullet. And we're not talking like teenagers who are discovering what they want to do with their hair. We're talking like James's age and younger, like six-year-olds with full-blown mullets. I can't get behind it.
I'd say we've come out the other side now.
I think so.
Mullets, last summer, every county show I was at, every young farmer had a big, dirty mullet. Whereas now, I think the mullets
have...
back.
But what is it about when I see someone with a mullet, I feel like they want to get in a fight? I don't know what it is about that. I feel like it's quite an aggressive haircut. It just makes you look quite thuggish. That's just my own personal opinion. I'm very old now.
I think a mullet says more like, likes getting my car stuck in mud and definitely has liver problems from alcohol. Like, that's more what I get from a mullet.
Really? It's funny, isn't it, what you interpret? Oh God! Everyone here's got a mullet. All the kids.
Or one of those blokes you see with a mullet, and you're like, I know for a fact that how I judge you makes me think you're probably bad with your kids, but you're probably great with your kids. Like, you just, you know.
Yeah. I also there's the. Do you know who Benson Boone is?
Yes.
Yeah.
So a lot of the Benson Boone look as well, with the moustache and the hair. And I had my nephew to stay over the summer with two of his friends, the lovely Kian and Luca. And Luca turned up with a moustache and the look. And I was like, oh my God, all right, Benson Boone. And they all laughed heartily and ha ha ha. And they admitted by the end of the 2 weeks of living with me, they had no idea who Benson Boone was and were just laughing at me to appease me.
They were being polite. That's nice.
Yeah. I was like, oh, thanks, boys. Yeah, that made me feel old. Yeah, but Benson Boone's quite cool, I thought. I thought I was being down with the kids, apparently not.
Was that on your bingo card for 2025? We'll want to look like 80s porn stars in 2025. Like, that's what we're going for. The mullet, the big tash.
So we have been now half an hour in. I don't think we've spoken about horses at all. Do you think people care?
I think they care.
Do you? Well,
let's talk horses. I'm going to France next week with Miracle, who's my little 15-3. He's doing the World Championship for Young Horses, and he is on really good form, so I'm very excited.
Can you be our Shut Up and Ride reporter from Le Lyon?
Yes. Hello, welcome to Le Lyon. And I always do. I'll be trying to speak French to these French people. And I always fail, but they're always very nice. Well, they're normally very nice about it and try and help me along.
I just wanted to ask quickly before we move on, like, does your prep work look a lot different for a competition that's abroad than to what you would do in the UK? Like, with the prep for the horse, or it's training, or it's like, no. You know, identical.
It'll be exactly the same. Yeah. The only kind of difference is... when you're going to be transporting to get over there, you know, you'd want to try and get in there probably a little bit earlier than you would for an event over here. And obviously the transportation is, well, you know, because you do it, like, is really complicated now.
Yeah.
Is that
really
Brexit?
Complicated?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really complicated now. And it's kind of scares me a little bit.
Does someone do that for you, or do you do that?
Yeah. We've got somebody that organises all the paperwork and... But you have to, like, now you have to have, like, the vehicle has to be cleared and has to have a certificate, which you can only get by going to Ireland or to Europe to get it done. The horse has to have a carne, which is an absolute fortune to have. Mm-hmm. And then you have to have health papers that are signed by the vet before you leave, which we didn't used to have to do before. You did have to have papers, but you didn't have to have it signed by a vet on when you leave. And then when you arrive at Calais, the horse has to be checked by a vet, and that can take a really long time. So sometimes they can be on the lorry for hours and hours and hours, longer than they need to be, which is really frustrating.
Mm-hmm. Is he a good traveller?
Yeah, he is a good traveller, actually. Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Because that's a worry, isn't it? If you've got something that's stressed or something like...
So I feel a bit more comfortable with him because... when you go Dover-Calais, it's a shorter trip, obviously. But if you're going Portsmouth to Caen, that's like 7 hours or something, 6 or 7 hours. Jeez. And it's kind of overnight, and you can only check the horse once or maybe twice if you're lucky. That you have to be escorted down to check them. So they're on their own down there for a very, very, very long time, and that scares me a bit. I don't like that.
Yeah.
So which one are you doing?
Anything could happen.
So you're sleeping, or well, you can do it in the day, and then you can go and those are things you can do.
So you're doing Dover, are you?
We're doing Dover-Calais, yeah.
Do horses get seasick? And that's not me being flippant.
No, don't think so.
No,
don't think
travel
so.
Travel sickness is all to do with the airway and the fact that they've got their head up for so long.
Yeah.
That's why it's really important to always get your horse's head down when you're traveling, well, as often as you can, because it's really unnatural for them to have their head up for that long a period of time.
Yeah.
What's the recommendation?
That's why when you travel with like the big hauliers, they don't let you tie them up so they can move their head.
Which is a good thing.
It's also one of the reasons why I really, really am not a big hay net person. Because I want my horses eating with their heads down.
It's quite stressful because it's so easy to miss something and then, you know, you're not going.
The most stressful thing I've ever had is when we were driving to Denmark to do a show. I had 10 horses and we're doing the vet checks. Ta-ta-ta, going along, this is great. And then they're like, excuse me, can we see you? I was like, yeah. They're like, this last horse, we've got a problem. I was like, what? They were like, it's got a fake passport.
No.
What?
I was like, no, it doesn't. Like, that's the horse, that's the... They were like, okay then, explain this. ID number on the thing, scanned the microchip in the horse, different number.
Oh no.
I was like, it's not. No, it's not. So we're kicking off. We're like, trying to sort this out. A senior, a more experienced vet who's done more of this comes on and is like, where did this horse come from? I was like, he's from Portugal originally, but I know he's been around a bit. So they scanned more and more of his neck and then found another beep. They were like, no, there it is. They're like, it's got two.
Oh my
God. It's been microchipped twice.
The stress. Ooh,
that is stressful.
Can you imagine? Yeah.
Oh my God. And that's the thing. Like, it's like you'd all have to turn around, all 10 horses, wouldn't you? You can't just... Like, oh, do you know what? Well, it's not like, I don't know. I was going to say it's not like leaving a child, but you're not allowed to do that either. We'll pick it up later when we get back, when we're done.
It's not like a piece of produce. It's not like
that's
gone off or gone mouldy, so let's kick it out.
Or we can leave it in a locker till we get back.
Yeah. Yeah, so lucky. And so they wrote me a thing on the passport and then said, you need to sort this out and get like a proper letter written by your vet and stuff that says this horse has two microchip numbers. These are the two numbers.
Oh my God, the stress.
One of them.
Horse, I was also a little bit like, oh, I always thought you acted calmer than your age. We should probably look deeper into that. Maybe there's a few extra years on top.
Yeah. Do you always go that high pitch? Is your thinking voice that high pitch?
My thinking voice.
Yeah, you just went, oh, we should probably look into your age.
Yeah, it's my panic voice. That's my like, oh, fuck.
So it's your cortisol levels, isn't it? Like, which go through the roof. So I always think with animals in that kind of like really stressful situation, like that kind of internal like cortisol levels through the roof when you're training and they're put in those scary situations. Because we as people can rationalize it. I feel like this because I'm in a panic. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? This is put, I'm in a panic situation. I'm scared or I'm frightened.
Well, you say that, but a lot of people can't rationalize it.
Yeah. But do you think horses can, like, or animals can go, I feel like I know that's scary and I feel, do you know what I mean? Like,
I think
that
it goes
kind
both
of level
ways,
of fear.
Though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
As in, it was your brain power and your ability as a human to, like, interpret knowledge that got you stressed in the first place.
Okay, yeah. Yes.
Because yeah. A horse wouldn't have the mental... Like, say I'm trying to take my horse with two microchips into France. Yeah. When me and the vet are freaking out, horse
they don't know.
Fucking know.
Yeah. But can they sense it off you, do you think? Like, the panic?
Maybe a bit, but not that
much. Oh, yeah,
much.
They can definitely sense that.
But I think... Sorry, the reason I said... Because in my situation, I had, like, 10 on the lorry. So if yeah. I think 9 other horses staying relaxed would be outweigh me freaking. But yeah. I don't... So that's the thing I think people overestimate, like, the horse's brain power in situ... Do you know, I don't think they can plan ahead. I don't...
They don't think they look in the distance and go, that looks scary. No. By the time I get there, I'm going to be scared. You think they just are reactive in the moment.
Yeah.
They don't weigh up. Oh, there's the trailer. They might try and put me on that in a minute, so I'm going to start getting worried now. You don't think that happens if they're bad at trailer loading or that panics them? Do you not think?
But that... Yes and no.
Because they know when they're going to a show, they just sense it. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but you get lots of horses that wouldn't walk... Lots of horses that are bad to load on a lorry that wouldn't walk up to the ramp if led to it, but they're tied to the side of the lorry.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So how much association is there or isn't there? Yeah.
Yeah, So I think that's a big thing in it, but it becomes
it's very easy to anthropomorphize them.
Yes.
Oh, good word, Jenny Rudolph.
Thank you. I was hoping someone would notice that was a big word for me.
It's a great word.
I was thinking about when one of my most stressful things when I was traveling horses abroad was when we had a blowout on the motorway.
Mate, and we're not talking about what you and James did in the back of a lorry.
Jenny Rudolph, that is terrible.
You're terrible.
It was too easy. I'm sorry.
And they weren't in the back. Simon was still driving at the time.
Yeah.
No.
caveat, that has never happened. That
it's
has
a
never
joke.
Happened. Yeah, it's a joke. What is it that Alan Carr says when people tried to cancel him, or he got cancelled once? And then he said, I could apologise for this, but you'd all say, I don't mean it. And people laugh. And then he goes, see, you're now getting the point.
Yeah.
I don't
I like
mean
that.
It. Yeah. Okay. So you had a blowout.
Oh,
whereabouts were you?
So we were, I can't even remember. We were like two or three hours into our journey. We'd gone on the Dover to Calais ferry. We were heading to Pau, which is like, right at the bottom of France, so it's like miles and miles and miles. It like takes like 24 hours to get there. So we had this blowout, and I'll tell this story. It was quite amusing at the time. Well, not at the time. It was actually awful at the time. It was pissing it down with rain. It was pitch black. It was the middle of the night, and I felt incredibly stressed about the whole thing. So I had to like jump out of the lorry because we were right. There's no hard shoulder on the French motorways, so like we were right in a really dodgy spot.
Oh,
so I had to run back
and
wave traffic across because it was quite a busy motorway. And then these two guys turned up in this little van. Like, it was just like Laurel and Hardy. And they're like, oh, hello. And I tried my best French accent to talk to them, but they didn't really understand what I was saying. But they were like, right, you need to drive your truck up to the lay-by, which is just up, like it was like 200 meters, 300 meters away. Then you need to go and park up there. And I was like, but it's on the rim. And they're like, you'll be fine, carry on. So I was like, so I got in and they were in front of me and they're like, come on, drive. And I was like, so I was driving and they're like, yeah. Whoa, no. And it was just like, big, like they were just hilariously funny. And eventually we got there and they were like, right, okay, so you're now safe, so in half an hour's time there'll be a recovery vehicle will come and sort the tire out for you. And I was like, yeah, we're gonna hear for hours. So literally in half an hour, almost on the second, this guy turned up And he didn't speak any English at all. He looked absolutely terrifying. He was a like really big, burly bloke. And he was like, and he kept on putting into his phone like to translate it. So like he was doing all through his phone. And he's like, basically, I don't have a tire, the right tire for your vehicle. I can put one on, but it's not going to get you to where you need to go to. So you're going to have to stay overnight somewhere. So don't worry, you can come back to my garage. And I was like, what about the horse? And he was like, it's fine. I've got a space in my garage where you can put the horse. And I was like, this is not good. That, and as you can imagine, like my heart was going, and I was like, this is just so incredibly stressful. And the guy, it was like, you follow me. So we like, so he put on this other tire, which wasn't right. And there was, so we followed him. And
like
then
a saver.
Yeah, and like I was thinking, this guy could be a serial killer. He could be anybody. Like, what? This is really scary. And anyway, so then he stopped, put his hazards on, he stopped. Sorry, is this a boring story yet?
No, this is. Okay. Me and Ben are like literally, don't stop, keep talking.
But like, so he put his hazards on, he stopped, and he got out, and I was like, oh my god, he's gonna like shoot us all. And he was like, I've just spoken to a friend of mine who has some stables, so we're going to go there instead. And you can stay there overnight. So he drives. So this really burly, scary, dodgy-looking bloke drives us to this incredible place, chateau, beautiful stables, indoor school, outdoor school, totally private, lovely farmhouse. It's with like next door to the chateau, and these people lived in the farmhouse, and they in the middle of the night, they came out, I greeted us, put us in this beautiful stable, like thick bed, like everything was kind of, they're like, do you need, hey, what do you need? We'll sort everything. In the middle of the night, they're like, we'll see you in the morning for breakfast. And then the guy was like, the mechanic, scary guy, actually suddenly turned out to be really lovely, was like, I will be back at 11:30 tomorrow morning with your tire. I need to drive to Paris to go and get it, but I'll get it for you. And so we like stayed at this place, and these people are just divine, and they're like friends now. And like I stayed there
That's
on the
amazing.
Way back, and then I stayed there for another event another time, and it's just, and they took us for a guided tour around the chateau. It's just incredible, and it was amazing.
What are their names?
So stressful. I can't remember now. Isn't that awful?
Edit that out, Jenny. Edit that out. Simon's just about to go to France again. He needs his stop-off spot. Don't let him know he's forgotten their names.
You could have just made anything up right then, and we would have believed you. Francois.
Francois. But the guy was an event rider, and when he found out that we were going to Po, he was like, he just thought we were wonderful, and yeah, they were just so nice.
What, the mechanic guy who's who did your tire, or the people you stayed with? They were an event rider.
The people we stayed with.
Oh my god, that's so amazing! So
it was really amazing, and they were so lovely, and it just made me think even more that I love French people,
and not to judge poor mechanics by their size.
I know,
and burliness.
I know, because I was like, yeah, this guy is literally going to murder all of us. But he was like, no, he's not. He's going to take us to an absolutely beautiful place to stay.
Oh my god! Can you imagine breaking down in like Milton Keynes and someone from the AA going, "Hang on a second, I know where I'll put you up," and rocking up to like Laura Bechtelsheimer's and you staying in her beautiful house and in her one of her cottages? Just wouldn't fucking happen, would it?
That's so true.
The AA wouldn't turn up for a bloody week.
But it was amazing, like standing on the side of the road in the pouring rain, thinking this horse is going to get killed soon because these juggernauts are coming down here like hell. And
I hate to take a dark turn.
It's amazing. You're sorry.
I hate to take a dark turn, but was that before or after the horrible tragedy that happened to poor Nick Gauntlet?
That was after. It was after.
Yeah. So do you know about this, Ben?
Was that I saw the video from a while back of that lorry getting taken out by another lorry on the motorway.
No, I don't think there is a video. So this was poor Nick, who's a friend, was driving to Blair, where his lorry broke down. Is it the A9? That really scary road. And luckily had got his children and wife out of the lorry and onto the side of the road, as you should. And that is exactly what you have to do, guys. And if you're in a car or whatever. But of course, you can't really get the horses out. I don't know if that you should or what the protocol is with horses. And his top horse was on the lorry, and I think some others. And yeah, a juggernaut creamed in to the back of his lorry.
And obviously that was very high on in the back of my mind. And so I had my high vis jacket on and my triangle, which made absolutely fuck all difference. And it was literally like, I just don't want this lorry to get hit. It was so stressful. It was so stressful.
So I'm guessing, is it more dangerous to get the horses out? Like, I don't know. What would you do if you knew you were going to be there?
Where would you put the horse, though?
Yeah.
Especially in Simon's situation. Like, at least by some, like, on the motorway here, if you got the horse off, you'd have to try and get it to jump the metal barrier, but then you could kind of get it to clamber up the hill, which doesn't seem advised. But like you said, there's no hard shoulder, there was nothing. You were just, where are you going to put the horse if you get it off?
But it all turned out all right in the end.
It was I think it's quite a cool story.
I think it's an insane story.
It is a very cool story. And just to take a bit of a diversion, because we have been sent, because our lovely listeners, they do look to us for not always answers, but understanding or to tackle some of the shit stuff that's out there. And I've been sent quite a few times, so I don't want to ignore it or overlook it. A video recently.
Can I have two?
Of a horse.
Wet myself. I really.
Okay,
really
I'll introduce it, and you go for a wee. So a video recently of a dog walker, I think it was, who was out on a walk and saw a horse in a field that, to anyone who doesn't know anything about horses and has come across this video, it looks like they are training this horse to be, I don't like the word broken, but it seems quite fitting in this scenario to use the terminology broken.
You'd probably say backed.
Backed, yeah, to be backed. And it looks like they, again, we're only going off videos that we've been sent, guys, so we're just going off the information we have. I'm also not going to name the person's name because there is no, I've not seen anywhere that it 100% is the name of this person. So until we get that, I don't want to name them as of yet, but I'm pretty sure you can find out if you go for a deep delve, if you want to know who is being accused of this. But the horse, Simon, looks like it's in some kind of draw rein contraption, but its nose is down and it's got a dummy. Now, when you're breaking horses in, I've never used them, to be honest. I've never used the dummies that you tie on the back of a horse. But it looks like it's got one of those kind of backing dummies tied fully saddle, full bridles. And it's just been basically left in what is a really small field. And so it's got head tied down, left in a field, in a pen. That's my interpretation of the video, Simon. What is your interpretation of it? And it just looks like it's been left there. And she went for a walk and came back and it was still there. So it'd been abandoned in this situation.
Yeah, that's exactly how I understood it. And I've seen a very small snippet of the video. And it's pretty horrendous. Like I've never used a dummy like that, backing horses. It's never been a thing. I'm not sure I even know anybody that has, well, that I'm aware of them doing it. Have you ever used that, Ben?
No, I anecdotally know of one person that tried using one, and that horse has never been that great. But that could be that one horse. But
yeah.
I don't... Logically, it doesn't make sense to me. Like, let's forget that a human's a human.
Yeah.
And let's just say a human's a piece of equipment that a horse could be scared of, then they need to get used to it being on their back.
Yeah.
So, like, for us, when we do the film and TV work, we do have to work with a lot of armor. And you imagine, like, the sound of it, the weight of it, the way it clanks. Mm. I can't think of anything worse to get a horse ready to carry armor than tying a piece of armor to the saddle and then just being like...
Leave it
keep
there.
Spooking and bolting until it.
Because you're
stops.
Not getting used to it. You're just becoming aware of, like, not getting used to it. I don't know how to articulate this. They're not getting the horse used to it. You're telling them they have to deal with it and suck it up. Whereas,
yeah, it's called flooding. The training term is called flooding.
Yeah.
And basically, it's the same as, have you ever seen any of those nature documentaries where, like, a pride of lions or a pack of wolves are chasing some sort of antelope or deer or something? And they don't pull it down, it just stops.
Uh-huh.
And then they pull it down. Like, it like gives up.
Yeah,
it stops
yeah.
running. And then they grab it. That's the concept. That's what flooding is. It's where you keep a stimulus that scares a horse next to or touching the horse until the horse stops and then you remove it.
And basically, you're proving that there's no escape, and so the only thing to do is stop. And it used to be a way that a lot of horse training was done, but now, thank the Lord, people are moving away. The bit that terrifies me more in the video as well is, like, you wouldn't... It's weird logic, isn't it? Like, I wouldn't leave a horse tacked up in a field. My Lord. Like, well, it could have It's not just that, though, Ben, is it?
Like, it's tacked up in the field or in a turnip pen, whatever it is. But it's got its head literally tied to its chest. I mean, what the hell is that about? Like, I don't...
What benefit?
To anybody who's not seen it, imagine if a horse was beautifully in front of the bridle. Do you know what I mean? Like, nose poked out in front of the outline and then invert it. That it's, you've got like a tiny cake slice of daylight between its throat and its neck.
Basically, like, it is the epitome of Rolker, isn't it? And it's been held
its chin is on its chest or between its front legs. Yeah.
I don't understand it. Logically, I don't understand it.
And this is in the UK as well. And I'm not going to say the rider's name. Apparently, they're a showing riding producer. And
You're not winning showing classes behind the vertical. I've known of yards in Spain that I do not approve of, where the like 3-year-olds and stuff, the stallions, are left inside reins in the stables for hours every day just to get
Spain I've seen, and I'm not just picking on Spain, I'm sure other countries, and it just shows that the UK is just as bad if this has been going on in someone's field. But in Spain where I was working, I went and helped at a yard down the road, and I then couldn't go back because the young horses for the farrier, they have electric fencing around the inside of the stable so the horses don't rub their manes. Yeah. So the horse, every time it turns around, is basically getting an electric shock. Can't lie down, can't stand up, can't do anything, just has to stay put. Because if it tries to scratch, it gets an electric shock. So, I mean, the things that people do are fucking horrific. But for it to be so... I mean, these people were doing this behind a barred, he couldn't put his head out over the bars, the whole stable was shut down. But to be doing this in a field, this horse is clearly stressed in the video.
It's striking out of the front leg and just looks very uncomfortable and very unhappy.
Do you guys know what I mean when I say it doesn't logically make sense, though?
Yes, 100%.
Like, because if it was a rearer, and you were scared it was going to go over backwards on you, and that's why you were using the braking dummy, having side reins that tight would make the problem worse.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, because if you're trying to get it used to the dummy, it can't see it. You've pinned its head down. So what is the purpose of it?
I read somewhere that... I read somewhere that it was... The horses, very similar to the Heath Ryan thing. Oh, this was the horse's last chance saloon. And basically it was like really hard to break in, or it's a bolter, or I'm bad because I can't remember exactly what was put. Lucky horse that he's at least giving it a chance. Lucky horse that they are giving it a chance. Well, I think the horse would probably rather be dead than doing what it's doing to be given a chance.
I mean, it bits like that trope of it's its last chance, so it's worth it.
It's just bollocks.
Sorry, Ben.
I was just going to say, like, we as humans, we have the Geneva Conventions. We have rules of war. We have rules on how to kill each other. Like, so even in something as horrific as that, there are things that are unacceptable. Like, so this idea that because a horse is beyond your training capabilities, that it's okay to abuse it is... just insane.
That is the best line you could have just said. Just because that horse is beyond your training capabilities, it's okay to abuse it.
It's not okay to abuse it.
Sorry, let me say that again. Just because the horse is beyond your level of training capabilities, it's not okay to abuse it.
Yeah.
That just fucking sums up so many of these welfare problems, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You have to admit when something is beyond your training capabilities, or look for another training method. Now, you cannot say that you have tried everything. Because did you get a call from this person, Ben? Did you get a call from this person, Simon? No, you bloody didn't. So you haven't tried everything. And I reckon I could talk to a million trainers who haven't had a call who would train this horse better.
But that's the thing, though. That's the unfortunate thing with this, Jenny, is that clearly what this is not the first time that they've done this to a horse. Clearly, like they obviously think that it works, and it doesn't work. But like, well, and obviously, it does what they want it to achieve, which is obviously to get the horse ridden. But it's all done through fear, and I imagine that then there are problems with the horse at a later day. But what I'm saying is that like these people, it's not like they think that this is the best process. They think this is the best form of training, and it's not. We know it's not.
Yeah,
and I don't really understand why people don't realize that it isn't good training, because clearly some people think that it is the right thing to do. If you've got something that's obviously very tricky to break in, but I know people that can do it really, really well.
I don't think it helps that we get more and more of these stories on social media or in the news, because I think it makes people believe that everybody else is doing it.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that's a really sad truth.
But surely this is surely not an FEI problem, not a BD, BS, whatever. It is an RSPCA's problem. Surely that video should be sent to someone like that.
It's all
this
our
is
problem.
Animal.
All our problem.
Yeah, but no, the rather than like, obviously it's all those people, but like fundamentally the people, this person needs to stand up in court and be accountable for their behavior. Like this is animal cruelty. And like, is that, and it doesn't feel like, I don't know how to say this without getting in trouble. Yes, these riders get bans. If this stuff goes to FEI, this person doesn't ride under FEI rulings, but say it was, it goes to FEI or goes to whatever British federation they're under, they get a ruling, a ban or a fine, whatever. So there needs to be some kind of system where not only do you get banned from ever competing again, you are not allowed to own horses. This person should not be allowed, in my opinion, to own horses, as this is how they treat them. I feel that strongly about it.
I know what you mean. Disappointingly, I don't think the judicial system backs that. Like, do you know, someone will get arrested because they've got 60 horses starving to death on their property.
Yeah, absolutely. And
they'll
they
get banned from owning large animals for the rest of their life, but they won't see a single day of prison. They maybe do a bit of community service or something.
Yeah.
Do you know, they don't get a real sentence. And I don't think that's correct. I think, especially in the UK, I do not want to go down this route now on this podcast, but I think our entire legal system is insane. But in terms of the horse welfare side of things, I've thought about this for a while, and this could be a really, really off the wall, insane thing to say. What about if horses that were linked to people that were known to be like abusive in training to get to a top level?
Mm-hmm.
What if not only those people got their ban, whether it be 6 months or a year or 10 years or whatever, but that horse is taken out of the competitive league permanently because someone could profit on, because horses don't need to compete to have a good life.
No.
And if, or say, let's take a dressage horse, say a dressage horse only has really nice PF and passage because someone abused it earlier in its life, and then you had proof that that's how that was happened, I don't think other people should be able to profit from the talents that that horse has because they were created with abuse.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, in theory, I totally agree. But in practice, to police that and to...
Well, they've got passports and everything. If the horse is involved in a case, then you
if it's been done through abuse, like, how can you prove that abuse?
Message needs to be sent to the horse world in some way, shape or form, where something better than a 6-month ban needs to happen to some of these people. And there is no case that I've heard of where people are like, it's not going to stop people. A 6-month ban obviously doesn't work, and it's not pushing people off from being abusive. So something needs to happen in one case.
But the biggest problem with this is that, I mean, I don't know. I'm assuming that this person thinks that this is normal and thinks that this is okay and doesn't think that this is abusive. That's the biggest problem here, is that it's like they don't know that they're abusing them.
Oh,
I mean, they must do, but like,
I'm sorry, they must. They know that that is not an okay training method. You have to live under a fucking rock if you don't think that tying a horse's chin to its neck is cool.
But people like that, think of the horse as
equipment,
an object. As they don't think of it as a being, they just think of it as a way of.
Can I tie this into my what's annoyed me this week?
Absolutely, go for it.
It really joins in. I saw a post, exactly what you're saying, what you're both saying here, a post on Facebook today about rope halters. A trainer, a professional trainer, had written a post that they were angry and basically saying, stop saying that rope halters apply more pressure and hurt your horse's head more than a normal head collar because they don't. I've never read anything more ridiculous in my life. That's like saying, stop saying that Pelhams apply more pressure in the horses, like, as a bit than a Snaffle does. Like, it's
depends on who's actually implementing it.
Well, and it also doesn't with a rope halter compared to a normal head collar. Like, if you think a normal head collar's this thick, a rope halter's this thick, you get rope halters that have got these tiny knots tied across the nose and across the poll so that when you pull on them, it hurts the horse more, so the horse surrenders to what the person's asking them to do. And seeing a professional be so delusional that they didn't like that people were questioning their results because they'd achieved it with this tool, that they were then going to pretend that the tool didn't work in the way that they said it did so they could feel better about themselves. And I think that's such a massive... Like,
is that called gaslighting people? I never know how to use that term.
Well, it's gaslighting yourself and people. Okay.
Isn't I feel very
it?
Old right now.
Like, just because to just completely deny the purpose of something. Like, a rope halter exists to apply more pressure to a horse's head than a normal head collar. Like, that's its job. But then to deny it because people are questioning your results because you use that opposed to a normal head collar. Like, that's to me, that mindset blip is the start of that person going down a bad road.
Yeah.
Because they're just going, do you know what? Logic and reality, nah, that ain't going to fly for me to be able to sleep at night doing what I'm doing. So I'm going to stick with my opinions opposed to facts. And I think that's how it starts.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
So I've never really used rope halters. I don't know about you, Simon. Have you used rope halters much?
No, never.
No, I have to say, I would love to be, mainly because I've never been taught. I feel like it is something that is actually a tool. Would I be right, Ben? Like, you should learn how to use them in the way properly.
The only important thing with a rope halter, like, don't pull on, like, a normal horse person with empathy wouldn't misuse it. It's really thin, hard rope. So if you yank on it hard on your horse's head, it's going to hurt. If you've never used a rope halter, the important thing is to learn how to tie it. Because they tie, they don't buckle. And so if they pull back, a rope halter won't break like a normal head collar will. And so if you tie it in the wrong way, you can't untie it. And then you're in a really bad spot.
Yeah.
That's the big. And I get it. Like, from their history, they come from, I need a head collar. I'm on a ranch in the middle of Oklahoma, like 200 years ago. I can't do leather work, but I've got a bit of rope. Let's make a halter.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's what they're used for now. And, like, some of them are so thin and made of such hard, waxy rope. Do you know what I mean? You're like,
This is not. So my question is, might be a bit long-winded, sorry. So I, when I got my dog, Betty, from Cyprus a few years ago, she was very reactive. I've never had such a reactive dog to rescue or retrain. She wasn't food orientated, which is quite tricky when you've got a dog. So I went down a big research route of trying to find different ways to train her. And I came across this, like, care route. It stands for something. I can't remember now. But what I really learned, and which I hadn't ever it was always obvious to me. And I think I knew it in the back of my head. But when I read about it, it made more sense. So when you've got a dog that's reactive to other dogs, so say, for example, Betty and kids or whatever, if and you use those halters on the nose, because she was very, like, I was like, what's the best way to have her? Like, I didn't want to have her on a neck on a lead. All my dogs have always just been on leads around the necks. I've never had a dog with a problem on a lead, whereas she would go fucking mental. Like, she would turn herself inside out. So I got one of those. I went down that route of what type of halter to have on her. Mm-hmm. And I got one of those chest ones that was really big and thick and it clipped onto her back. And I was like, oh, this is amazing. But I looked into those ones you have on your nose, like a rope halter mm-hmm. on a horse. Sorry, I am going somewhere with this. And the research I did into it was, so say, for example, you've got one of those nose halters on and she sees a dog and I pull the halter, it's going to hurt her nose. She doesn't think of that pain as coming from me and the halter. She feels the pain and sees the dog. She thinks that dog has caused her that pain. So therefore, mm-hmm. she's going to be more scared of that dog. And it's things like if you pull the halter on their nose and they're near a child, she gets pain in her nose. She doesn't think it's the halter on me. She thinks children cause her pain. And it totally changed my mindset about how to train dogs. So when we saw other dogs, I then immediately didn't ask for any other command. I just gave her a treat, or she used to like licky trees that finally were, or gave her a praise or turned away. When she met kids, woohoo, isn't this wonderful? She was actually always very good with kids. And it made me realize so much about how dogs think, is that they're in that moment, what happens to them is why they become reactive to other dogs. So
yeah,
it was extraordinary for me. And so now when I see people with these halters around these dogs' noses, and you can see them, they're growling at my dog and they pull them back on the halter. And it's like, they're thinking that that dog is causing them pain. That's where they're getting. And I saw a puppy the other day being trained on one, and it was pulling, and the mum was pulling it back, and this dog was pulling it, and she was having this. And I'm like, oh my God, you're setting your dog up to hate its surroundings, because every time you pull on it, whatever it's looking at, it thinks it's causing it this pain. So my question to you is that similar with horses, do you think? When they feel that pain in that halter, is that association with the halter, or are they like dogs? And what they could be looking at that time, or what the scenario is. Do you see what I mean? It's quite a...
Yeah, and this is where it gets into the issue of, I don't really know. I have to chew on that a little bit.
But do you agree with that, with how dogs think? Would you agree with that?
I don't know. I don't know enough about training dogs. None of my dogs are trained. My dogs are feral. I live on a farm. They never go anywhere. They do as they like. It can take me 45 minutes to get Loki in after he's gone out for a wee on a night. Doing his own thing.
A light bulb moment for me in training this dog, to associate with what she was looking at with how she felt. But and if that, I gave her a treat, and it really changed with how she was with
that
other dogs.
I agree with, in terms of horses don't have amazing memories or planning, but they remember how they felt in a situation.
Yeah.
So like, great example of that is... an easy way of teaching a horse to rear is that obviously you ask it to go forwards and check it in front at the same time. So you tap it on the bum and you pull on the head collar and they go up. Like, I'm simplifying massively.
Yeah.
But if you do that in a good way, the horse stays calm and happy and they enjoy it and they feel involved. If you rush it, they just feel confined and driven, and they realize that the pressure comes off when they rear. So then, you've managed to teach the horse to rear as a trick. But next time you're stood in a gateway on a hack and a car drives by and the horse spooks and the horse wants to go forward, so there you've got your drive, and you pull on the reins and say,
it's
no,
go up.
It remembers what happened last time when I felt like this. I made it stop by rearing. It rears. And so it's making the horse feel better in the situation, which is why the more and more I train horses, I'm all about de-escalation. Like, if a horse is freaking out and having a hard time, the best thing you can do is anything you can to make the horse forget about getting the horse to do what you wanted it to do. Get the horse to feel better, because then when they're calmer, they'll do what you want them to do. And it's sort of showing them so that when we get into those situations in the future, that they're, that we're not going to react badly. And so,
like with my
conversation,
I do that with my young ones, like cross country schooling, like. I think similar-ish, like I just take it so slowly, and it just kind of stands back a bit to Lucinda Green, and like when you're doing step fences, like you could just crack on, like you could go and jump a few fences, and then you could teach them how to jump steps, and you could do it like cantering and jump up a step, and they might do it a little bit by accident. But I'm really keen on doing it in walk to start with, so they can just relax and just take it all in their stride and think about what they're doing, and there's no pressure. And then I find that if you do it like that, then they never have a problem with them. Like, It's when you try and rush it to start. And it's all a bit like water as well. Like normally, like with water in ditches, I'll do it first in hand and I'll walk in front of them and I'll say, yeah, see, it's not that bad. You can come with me. And they normally do. And it's in a really lovely, relaxed way. Whereas back in the day when I was a lot younger, we wouldn't do it as slowly as that. We'd try and get it done as quickly as possible. And quick is no good for horses. It's take your time. Take as long as you need.
Going quick makes it take longer.
Yeah. Well, that's Lucinda's little thing that she says that. She says, if you want to go, and she's talking about riding fast around the cross-country course. She said, if you want to go fast, first you've got to be able to go slow. And I think it's the same with every element of horse training.
But that is where, like, that halter analogy that I was talking about with the dog. So imagine you were taking that horse into water, and just before you did it, you gave him a good shove on the halter, and then it would go, okay, my foot touched the water, and I got pain on my head. Yeah, I got pain on my head collar, on my rope, or you gave it a smack with a stick. Oh, I go near water, I get hit on the arse. So that's where I think it is, yeah.
I was going to say, well, this is where you see with lorry loading and trailer loading problems. Most horses don't have an issue with going on a trailer. They're adverse to extreme pole pressure.
Yeah.
Because they go to the lorry, they hesitate, everything gets tight, they've got that pole pressure, so they raise the head to get away.
And normally smack it on the top of the lorry, I look back at, I will hold my hands up, I've done the whole, oh, come on, just get on the lorry, and now I would be a completely different human. But when I was young and starting out and a horse didn't get on, you'd be giving it a good pull and be like, get on! And now I'd be like, no, that's not going to get a horse on, just take your time, be patient. But that's what I mean. So same with a dog pulling you forwards with the halter and you pulling it. It's almost like the association with horses. You go get on this thing that looks a bit scary. Oh, by the way, I'm going to give you a shove in the head. They're not associating you in any of this. They're just going, that lorry means I get pole pressure. Why the bloody hell should I get on that?
The easiest example I could give to anyone, and I guess not to anyone, it's easy to me because I have a small human in the house at the moment.
I have two. I trump you.
See, now when toddlers fall over in the beer garden, everybody goes, there's a moment, toddler falls over, toddler looks at adults, everyone goes, hey, come on, it's okay. And then the toddler goes, oh, yes, fine. But if one of the adults goes, are you all right? They will burst into tears.
Yeah.
And what you're teaching them there is that, like, you can be shocked. And it's fine. Things can not go to plan and you can be shocked and it's fine. And like you know, the same sort of thing with the horses.
Or you can do some pretty shit parenting like I did yesterday. My son, bless him, he started playing rugby, which he loves. But it's that one at the moment where they have the flags around their waist. So you're not allowed to tackle. You've got to pull the flag off. But yesterday, as he was about to score a try, two kids came from behind. And they did trip over and they kind of tackled him and landed on top of him. And it was more the shock of it. I could tell he wasn't in pain. No, he stood up in tears. And when my son cries, he inhales and his lip go purple. And he was like properly. And I could see they hadn't hurt him. It was more of the shock of it. But he did come over and he went, Mummy, they tackled me. You're not allowed. I was like, it's fucking rugby. What the hell did you think was going to happen?
That's good parenting, Jenny.
Yeah, and I didn't say it's fucking rugby, but I did say it's rugby, darling. What the hell did you think was going to happen? Eventually, this is going to start to hurt. And he was like, what? But right now, they're not allowed. He loves a rule. James loves a rule. He is, oh my God, that boy is just so gorgeous. And he just is Captain Sensible. And he is just the most fabulous fucking human, my son. But in that moment, I was a little bit of tough love. I was like, buddy, this is only going to get worse. They are going to start tackling you. And I think it is a lesson in the ref didn't call it. What ref says goes. So you've just got to get up, brush yourself off and get on with it. And you could see some of the other parents, because in Canada, they are a little bit more embracing. And don't get me wrong, I will give him a hug last night. I stroked his tears away as we got a splinter out. But in that moment, and you can write in if you think I'm wrong, I was like, you're not hurt. Get on with it.
Now, am I right or wrong? More of that.
Yeah, do you think?
More.
Yeah, okay, I'd be like that.
I'll be like that teaching people in lessons.
Yeah, I don't want to do
if someone's
some
like, I really
damage.
Want to do X or Y with my horse,
And then they're getting in a real state and I can see they're getting panicked about it and they're going to cry about it or something. I'm like, we should just do something else. Yeah. Like, I don't care. Like, not that I don't care. I care about giving you the best knowledge you can to get to reach your goals. But if this upsets you this much, you probably don't want it yet. Like, wait. Yeah. We can do some more building towards it. Like, there's no need.
Yeah, I do that. Like, I do that with my teaching as well. If people don't want to do it, then we just don't do it.
Yeah, there's no point. Yeah.
Whereas no James really does want to do this. He really wants to play rugby. And I don't want it to come as a complete shock when it does start to become contact. So I was like, I can sit and hug you right now and be like, oh, yeah, no, aren't those boys awful?
No.
Or be like, it was an accident. They didn't mean to land on you. Just get on with it. Like, yeah.
How old is
he? You can't do anything but that.
You can't what? Sorry, Simon?
You can't do anything but what you did, to be fair.
Okay, good. Because I was a bit like, oh, have I been a bit tough love there?
No.
Because he's sobbing. Because one of the other parents was like, oh, yes, but I think it was because they weren't obeying the rules and that's why he's getting upset. I'm like, that's fine, but the ref decides the rules in rugby and the ref, what the ref says goes, and the ref said it was an accident and it was fine. So he's got to go with that.
And also, like, we're teaching him about life, fucking yeah. Denise. Do adults always follow the rules? Fuck off. I saw how you parked.
Sorry.
Right. Well, Simon, has anything annoyed you this week before we go?
Yes. 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 So I don't know whether this is maybe a little bit personal, actually. But anyway, I had...
That's all right. I think we've gone there already today.
No, like about somebody. So basically I had somebody that booked in for lessons with me. She booked in three times for lessons. The first time she booked in two lessons originally. First time she cancelled on me 12 hours before. And she sent me a text message saying, can't come tomorrow, fill my space. That was the message. Oh no, sorry, ooh. Fill my space. I'm coming next week. I was like, okay, fine, fair enough. That's a bit rude, but you know, whatever. The following week. And
no,
it was
it was
about 26 hours before.
Ben's doing bitch and wanker signs, by the way, that people can't see because this is a podcast, but I'm calling him out on it.
So 26 hours before, she messaged me saying, can't come tomorrow, fill my space. And then I think she messaged me again and later she said, oh, can I book in for another lesson? And I was like, yes. And then she did exactly the same thing again. She's like 24 hours before, she messaged me saying, can't come tomorrow, fill my space. And like, there was no kind of, I'm really sorry to mess you about. There was, which I suppose she shouldn't have to do that, but like I would. I'm really embarrassed because I've messaged you around yet again. None of that. It was literally, I'm not coming, fill my space, basically tough luck. But so it's what's annoyed me is like, I don't mind that she can't make it. Like, that's understandable. I'm sure she's got reasons for it, whatever. But, like, there's a thing called manners and they cost absolutely nothing. Like, yeah. It's like kindness. It costs absolutely nothing. So why can't you make use of it?
Manners maketh the human.
And but like I say, it's quite personal towards somebody. So I feel like maybe I shouldn't actually be saying that. But it's really annoyed me and it's just made me think, like, you know, manners are really important to me.
Allowed you to book her to book the third lesson?
Yeah,
because
I'd really
have been
sure.
Like, I'm really sorry. Like, fuck off.
Because Simon's the nicest man in eventing. Did you not know his reputation?
I think this is
an important lesson. This is what this podcast is for. It's for therapy. It's to educate people that it is not okay to treat your instructor like they are a piece of equipment. And that Siami has feelings too.
Mm.
He also needs to pay his bills.
But like, yeah, just, yeah. And normally, like, people when they cancel lessons with me, well, every single time, other than this one person, they've always been like, I am so sorry to mess you around. And normally it's like 2 weeks, a bit, 2 weeks before the lesson, they're like, I'm so sorry to mess you around. Is there a cancellation fee or any of that kind of stuff? And people are lovely, but this one, I was just like,
well, next time she wants a lesson, you have to go on ChatGTP and get a fancy cancellation policy and send her a T's and C's and make her sign it before she books.
Or just be like, no. You always, if you want to book again, you always pay in advance.
I won't even
take your booking until you've paid, and non-refundable because you must be around so many times. So if you want to carry on booking lessons and not turning up, cool.
But then, actually, do you know what?
I've told a porky, this isn't the first person to do this to me. I had somebody else that did this to me. She cancelled two lessons on the trot. One of them she didn't turn up to, actually, at all. So I was kind of sat waiting. And I had her number in my phone, and she's now saved in my phone as her first name always cancels.
Yeah. Fuck them.
Then I'm like, yeah, see ya.
But this, I think, is the problem with our industry, because you wouldn't do that to a dentist or a hairdresser without having to expect to pay, or a vet, without knowing you had to pay. And I think that is, or if I booked a cameraman and cancelled them that day, I'd have to pay at least half of their fee. But yet in the equestrian world, we don't have that kind of set in stone. I know some people do in respect.
I do.
But you know what I mean? Like but again, you don't want to be that person that people don't go in for lessons to because you say stuff like that to them. Do you know what I mean?
Ours is pretty strict, whether it be lessons or shows. There are the shows and lessons work on different timelines, but different. Like, if you book me for a show, the only time you can cancel me and not have to pay me something is about 6 months before. And then as it gets closer and closer, you're going to have to pay something. Mm. And then, if a show was to cancel us like a week before, it'd be like, cool, you're paying in full.
Well, I mean, I think I'm going to have to just come up with some sort of like upfront.
At least, I think realistically. I think it's different if you're at home or if you're at a different arena as well. If you're at home and a lesson cancels and they were coming to you or like at your base yard, do you know what I mean? Not the end of the world because you're like, sod it, I'll ride my other one.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're at a hired arena, I think really that's non-refundable. Like, cool, you cancelled in less than 72 hours. Like...
I agree. Right, this has been a roller coaster of an episode.
It has,
your horse live, Gregor's penis, horse abuse, and what's annoyed you. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I haven't done my what's annoyed me. Do you want to know what's annoyed me?
Go for it.
What's annoyed you? Soft-hearted Canadian mothers at tag rugby?
That. And I've turned 45 this week.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, neither of you two fuckers remembered, but that's not annoyed me.
Well, I didn't know.
That's standard. I'm struggling with 45.
Why?
And you know what's? Because it feels really old. Do you know what's annoyed me? Is I... So myself, again, I annoy myself a lot. I am trying to be that. You know when you read online, like, be strong, don't be thin. Because obviously I grew up in the 90s, right, where Bridget Jones was classed as fat and Kate Moss could have lost a few pounds. Yeah, heroin chic. Nothing tastes as good as thin. So I do think that is ingrained in me. I genuinely do. I'm going to the gym more than ever. I have got more muscles on my arms and stuff. When I was riding, and before kids, I was pretty skinny. I was like a stone and a half lighter than I am now.
I've seen you in your crop top trying to pull Simon in old country interviews.
Yeah. With my boobs. I am still really struggling with this newfound figure of perimenopausal, a bit more around the waist, and I'm trying to be really strong, and I can lift more weights than I could when I was working on yards. But when you're in clothes, you can't see your muscles, so you do look a bit bigger. And I was at a christening the other day, and there was obviously loads of professional photos, and I'm probably one of the only people I know who hasn't had Botox as well. And I just look really awful in every single one of these photos. And this is a bit, now sounds a bit depressing. Recently, a family friend has just recently died very young at the age of 50 from a brain aneurysm, really unexpected. And so there's this bit of me that's like, I am strong, I am empowered, and I am going to fucking not get old, and I'm going to prepare for older life, and I'm going to be strong, and I'm so lucky to be alive, and my legs work, and I really want to be that person. But this week, and I saw those photos, I am just like, it is just so fucking depressing. I'm like, I look old, I look awful, I feel fat, why can't I lose this weight? I barely eat anything. I'm so wrinkly. I wish I could afford Botox. All my friends have got Botox and they all look amazing. And like just that comparison, do you know what I mean? And it's so annoying because I want to be this woman that's this amazing person for my daughter. But yeah, I look in the mirror and I go, oh, I just look so awful and getting old is awful. And Just, do you know what I mean? Like, why can you have these two sections of brains? Why can't the part of my brain that wants to be this strong woman who's proud of her body, that's done so much for me, my body has done so much, it's made two humans, and why can't, when you know you want that part of your brain win, why can't it win? It's Mental Health Awareness Week as well, which is quite apt. But I don't, has anyone got any tools for me to help that part of my brain win? Because I'm just fed up of looking in the mirror and seeing the shit. I want to see you both silent.
I know what you mean.
Do you know what I mean? Because I'm sure you guys probably have insecurities and whatever.
Oh,
well, when you both look like that, why would you have? You're both so handsome.
No, I know exactly what you mean.
And this is where my husband is very, very good. My husband tells me I am gorgeous and fancies me. And if I walk in the room naked, he does that. it's like a stallion in heat. And he is amazing. He does always, he's very good. And he says you shouldn't be down on yourself. Like,
but what makes you feel like that though? Like, do you think that there are other influences on that? Like when you're very tired, when you've had too much on, when you're stressed, do you feel that you look at yourself in a negative way more when you're in that kind of scenario? Or do you think this is just something that you're like all the time?
I've always been like this. I've always thought I was fat. I look back at old me. I used to think I was fat in my 20s. I was pretty fat at university. One of my friends says to me, I was fat. I was your friend at uni, despite the fact you were fat. I was quite big at uni. She's very funny. She calls me Fat Slag, actually. I spoke to her earlier. She answers the phone. All right, Fat Slag.
It could be that friend.
Yeah, no. I've always, like, all my life thought, like, I think two older brothers, I always had puppy fat. And then in my early 30s, I was a rake. I was like 9 stone. I was tiny. And
so
I used to then
not,
think
so
I
can
was...
you not? So can you not train your brain to like realize that, you know, you can look back on those photos and realize that actually you're a beautiful woman now, but as you were a beautiful young woman then, you were more beautiful then than you actually realized. And you can look back on and see that, and you must realize that actually you're more beautiful now than you actually realize. And can you not like make yourself sort of also look back at the fact that you've been incredibly successful at what you've done? You've married a really, and I know we joke and whatever, you've married a seriously lovely man. Like, he is seriously special and he's a great guy, and you don't, and he's lovely, and you don't bag someone like that by being a twat or not being very nice or being unattractive.
So
or being,
how do you train your brain to do that? Like,
I think you have to work quite hard to make your brain do that. And I think you need to, like, you were talking earlier about tough love. I think you've got to be tough on yourself to, like, be like, actually, do you know what? Stop being so bloody hard on yourself. Actually, you are. You're a bloody good-looking woman. You're, like, you're incredibly successful at what you do. You've got two beautiful children. You've married an absolute cork of a bloke. Mm. But you just need to actually be a bit tougher on yourself to be nicer to yourself. And that's where we as people, I think, people in general, we're so negative about ourselves all the time. Like, we're always looking for what's wrong with us, what we're not very good at, what is the stuff that we... And actually, we need to look at, like, actually, what have I been really good at? Actually, do you know what? I was really good there.
Yeah,
and we're trained, like, society makes us be like, if you go, do you know what, I did a brilliant podcast last night, or I was on top form and I was absolutely brilliant. If you go bragging, it's called bragging if you do that, isn't it? And actually,
yeah,
no, you did a really good job. So, like, big yourself up for it. Sorry, I've gone off on that.
That was bloody amazing.
That is actually really, that's a very good point, because we are very English, aren't we? And we go, you're not allowed to self-congratulate or walk into a room and go, do you know what? I am hot. Like, we're meant to be kind of self-deprecating.
Well, because then you're considered to be a lesser person because you've been like that. And actually, you need to, like, turn that around and just have a bit of a word with yourself and give yourself some tough love in a positive way.
And I want to be so grateful that I get to have a 45th birthday. And then I look in the mirror. But I think it is, like, I saw a friend of mine the other day and she'd had Botox on her forehead and she looked fucking fabulous.
No, but
and
no.
Like,
can I just say, no. The amount of...
Well, because we all know that you've had it done.
Looking like, what do they call it? Oh, that weird thing where you're scared of things that almost look human but aren't human.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
Do you know, there's a word for
it. I think
it
does start out well, but then people take it too far.
Like, when I met George, she had Botox in her forehead to try and stop migraines, but it didn't work for the migraines, so she stopped. My wife became a lot more attractive to me when she got full use of her face. Like, I'm sorry, looking like a bee has stung your mouth does not make you look more attractive. Like, yeah. I honestly, I can't, I don't get my head around it at all. I think the Botox and stuff is awful. And I think also, like you say, it's a pleasure to, like I have these conversations with George and stuff, and I know they're, like, George is already upset with what making one small human has done to how she looks in the mirror.
Oh, God, it does. It ruins you.
But then there's the battle, isn't there? Like, humans, I think we're programmed to feel sad, really. Like, we're negative. Like, surely it's better to be upset about the fact that you've changed your body in a way that you don't like quite as much to make a human than to have not been able to make the human. Do you know what I mean?
100%,
Surely the positives outweigh the negatives in that one by a million percent.
And I totally agree with you. So that is my internal struggle, is I can see that. So why do I still feel sad?
Because,
do you know what I mean? Yeah.
Everybody's got 20/20 vision when they're looking back.
Okay.
What does that mean?
It means
for the idiots in the room.
When you look back on your life, you separate things into good and bad, happy and sad, very quickly and very cleanly. That time of my life was happy because I looked like this. That my time of this was a bad time because that was going on. But actually, if you were back living in that moment, you would probably feel the same as you do now, just about different things.
Yeah.
And it's like, I do this a lot with myself at the moment, of just being like, do you know, like, we make jokes about me, like, getting my kit off and stuff all the time. I promise you, at 32, with a child, even though I didn't make it, I just helped make it at the start, I don't look the same as I did when I was, like, 22, 23 and doing all my bodybuilding. And there's loads of times that I'll catch myself getting out of the shower or the bath and look in the mirror. And even though I know, for most people my age, I still look great, I'll still look in the mirror and be like, fucking hell, let yourself go.
Yeah.
But it's actually.
I'm the same. I mean, I'm not like ripped like you are at all. But I used to, like, when I was 25, I was quite ripped.
Yeah.
Very. And I'm not anymore. And I do. And I'm like, oh my God, you have let yourself go. But actually, I'm 43 years old now. Like, you know, it's not as easy to stay in
shape.
There's,
would you rather be, like all of us, would you rather be achieving the things that actually matter in your life, or would you rather have a six pack? Because you could fuck off all other responsibilities
and go and get a six pack.
Dedicate your life to doing that at the cost of everything.
Yeah.
And what's the point? I'd rather, like, you know, like you say, you've got your amazing children, amazing family, amazing life, amazing job opportunities, amazing success. Like, yeah, we could cancel this podcast and you could spend extra time in the gym and doing shit like that, but it wouldn't make you happier.
No, because then I wouldn't be speaking to you guys. And it does feel better to talk about it, because I think you sit and wallow. And I think social media doesn't help, does it? Because you just see everyone looking so fucking glamorous all the fucking time.
Oh, well, they're all on cocaine and Ozempic, so fuck them.
No.
I think maybe we should do like a little exercise, and maybe everyone can do it at home as well before the next podcast. Like, Jenny, you should go away. Or in fact, we should all go away and we should all write down 10 things, like look back at old photos of, like, maybe write down a time when you thought you looked really, really great, and write down a few different things about what you're really proud of, like stuff that you've achieved, or you've got a really great partner, or you've got something that's really positive in your life, and write 10 things down, and maybe we can share them next time.
Okay.
I like that. 10 things. I've written it down.
10 things.
Cool. And that's everyone at home as well, not just us.
And then send us in some of the things you're proud of about yourselves, and we'll shout them out.
Yes. Absolutely. I love that.
A feel good episode.
Yes.
I also would like someone today just go and say something nice to someone, because I love it. When I go to a show and I see people, I do love, like, I don't know, like, if I see someone's made an effort with their dress, you can tell when people have made an effort. I try and point it out. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, wow, that dress is awesome. Or what have you done? Like, your hair. Or you're just looking hot today, if someone's smiling and happy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, go
if
and
I'm
give
walking
someone
down
a compliment.
The street and I see dudes that are a bit jacked looking at himself in windows, I'll be like, looking big, brother. Looking stacked. And they're like, yeah, I am. And you're like, yeah, you are. I saw you looking at yourself in the Debenhams window, flexing with a t-shirt up. I saw you.
Okay, that is your mission, people. Go and make someone else feel good about themselves today.
100%. That's a very good one.
I love talking to you boys. You make me happy.
Fucking amazing, Jenny. And if anybody tells you you're not, send them to us.
because Ben can get in the headlock and then you can...
Simon's like, send them to Ben. Right, you gorgeous people. I love you boys more than you could ever know. We are going to Your Horse Live. So get your tickets, people. Come and see
us. Sponsored by Charles Owen.
Yes. Oh my God, I love Charles Owen.
Brought to you by Your Horse Magazine.
Yes, we love Charles Owen. They are wonderful. They're supporting us again. They are getting us all together. But we are also going on tour in January. If you haven't bought your tickets, why the fuck not? And yes, you can bring your children. And we promise not to swear too much. Get your tickets, guys. You'll see the boys. Actually, we talk all this talk. Let's see what the boys can actually do with some horses. And of course, Hannah Silly Prune's going to be there and Becky Moody will be there on the Bishop Burton night. And you can get your tickets on Covago. You can get your merchandise with Supercross Country. And we're going to bring out some really cool merchandise. Hopefully that will be available at Your Horse Live. Watch this space. I love it when I see people wearing Shut Up and Ride neck straps. Ben, you need to send me a video of your Shut Up and Ride neck strap in action. I haven't seen that yet.
I mean, it's going to be a while, isn't it, Jenny?
Yeah, sorry. How is are you walking yet? We haven't even asked that.
No, let's not even talk about my leg.
Oh, really? Oh.
No, it's not bad, but there's just like toss all news, basically.
I like the fact you're on the beer though, rather than the Oramorph now.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm looking forward to a glass of rosé tonight. So please get tickets to the tour. Come see us. It's going to be hilarious and lots of fun. But more importantly, share this podcast because you never know, you might make someone smile. I hope so. You're both looking very handsome today. Very handsome. Benjamin, keep doing your exercises and get better. We love you.
That'll be good. Love you too.
More videos of you on your scooter. But all that's left to say, boys,
I can say it in French now.
Oh, can you? Did you learn it in French?
But actually, a very nice lady actually messaged me on Instagram saying, this is how you say it. There are a few ways, but I'm going to say, tais-toi et monte.
Can you sing it like that?
Tais-toi et monte. Tais-toi et monte.
Oh, I love you, boys.
Jeez.